Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of country throughout Australia and recognise their continuing connection to land, waters and culture. We pay our respects to their elders past, present and emerging. Welcome to This Song Is Yours, the music podcast that takes you behind the scenes of the music industry's brightest talents. I'm your host, Simon Fink, and today, for episode 305, we're bringing you an hour-long special filled with the electrifying energy of South by Southwest Sydney. We had an incredible time exploring what the city had to offer, gigs at Universal Music House and the Blair Showcase evenings, and soaking up the music and creativity that define this event. But our main mission was clear: to dive deep into the art of songwriting, and I feel like we did relatively well. In part one of our two-part series, we had the privilege of sitting down with some remarkable artists who we believe are shaping the future of music. We engaged in insightful conversations with talents like Almost Monday, Sarah Kinsley, Haley from Slapface, Foley, and Miss Canina. They generously shared their creative processes, gave us a glimpse into their reason. We also got the inside scoop on how their week at South by Southwest went down. For an even more immersive experience, be sure to check out the video interviews with these artists on our YouTube channel. The link to watch is available in the show notes of today's episode. We're proud to mention that both of these episodes are brought to you by Gin Lane, a spectacular gin bar nestled right in the heart of Chippendale. Their support allows us to bring you the best content from events like South by Southwest Sydney, and we could not be more grateful for Gin Lane looking after us during our time at South by Southwest. Before we jump into these incredible conversations, please make sure you're subscribed to This Song Is Yours on your favourite podcast platform, and don't forget to follow us on social media for all the latest updates. You will find all the details in the show notes for today's episode. So without further ado, let's step into the world of songwriting and musical innovation with all of our talented guests as we get ready for an unforgettable ride through South by Southwest Sydney. Before we get to today's interviews, we just want to say a massive thank you to our sponsor for our time while we've been here at South by Southwest Sydney. It is Gin Lane. Gin Lane is one of Sydney's most unique small gin bars. It is located in the heart of Chippendale in a converted 18th century townhouse. It's a perfect spot to have a gin and tonic with friends, catch up, have a fancy cocktail. We just want to say a massive thank you to Gin Lane again for having us while we've been here at South by Southwest Sydney. Please welcome the gentleman from Almost Monday. We've got Luke Colin Dawson. Gentlemen, hello, how are we?
What's up, man? Thank you so much for having us.
My absolute pleasure. I believe we had the pleasure of speaking over Zoom last time you were in Australia.
Right. Yeah.
I think over, you were in the Universal offices.
Yeah.
We were where we're usually based, but at the time we talked about touring, playing some shows, and it's finally happening. You guys have been here all this week playing some shows. How have they gone?
Yeah, they've gone great. We played two shows last night, and then we're playing tomorrow at the Courtyard. It's like, I think, for the Rolling Stones, so it'll be cool. We're stoked. That's stoked to be back in Oz.
How have the shows gone? I did see some footage. Who did I see it from? There's been quite a few people at your showcases already kind of getting into it, dancing. Yeah. From your perspective, how have those shows gone?
Yeah, it's always fun. It's always interesting coming to like a new country. You're always a little bit like, okay, let's see what the fans are like. And Australian fans are really fun. It kind of reminds us a lot of like home San Diego fans. It feels like a similar type. So always feel at home here and always feel stoked.
I feel like the music of Almost Monday is very similar to the kind of Australian surfer, lackadaisical kind of vibe. So I think you guys have kind of just slotted in pretty well in terms of like people loving the band and then kind of getting on board. It's an exciting time because there's a lot of new music coming from you guys as well this year. I think the most recent single, Coast to Coast, is out at the moment. Yeah. That seems to be resonating well with people. Yeah. In terms of that track, how did that kind of come about in terms of the songwriting and the inspiration for Coast to Coast?
Want to take it?
Sure. Yeah, I think with a lot of the new tracks, we're kind of just coming back to kind of what we started. It's funny because you get into this industry and you think you have to be a certain way or to write towards a certain thing, I guess. But I think coming back to just what's authentic to us, which is, you know, just a lot of beach, a lot of sun, surfing. It sounds cliche, but it is just kind of our lives. So it feels good to be just ourselves, and whether people like it or not, it's like it's just us. So we're happy with it.
That's awesome. Has that songwriting method kind of changed for you guys? I think when we spoke, you advised that like originally it was kind of in, I want to say it was Dawson's dad's garage that you were practicing. It was in someone's dad's garage.
Wow, we've been in many garages.
All the garages.
Yeah, we've been in Gary's garage for all of COVID. That was a lot.
Has the songwriting changed and kind of evolved in terms of how you guys write your music, I guess, from the garage now that you're, I imagine you're writing in sessions, in studios, things like that. Yeah.
Yeah, we work with our friend back at home, Simon Oscroft. He's our producer, so we work with him like all the time on music in his home studio.
With Coast to Coast and some of the other singles you've released this year, there does seem to be kind of, I want to say, like a little bit of a shift to that more coastal sound, but it seems that you're building towards something. I do want to know, and obviously you can shut me down if I'm touching on anything that's not known yet, are we looking towards possibly a collection of songs, maybe an EP, maybe the Almost Monday album?
Yeah, I think... No, man, we're super stoked. We just started working on an album really like a few weeks ago. So after this trip, we're kind of locking ourselves away for the rest of the year and going to make, you know, hopefully a debut album that we're super stoked on. And yeah, next year's going to be fun, man. I would just... I feel like it's time to kind of go a little bit deeper and make a full project. It's all the bands we grew up loving and stuff. It's just what we, for us, it's always been kind of the goal. So, yeah, really excited. Hopefully it turns out the way we want.
That's incredibly exciting. I know that, and I can only obviously speak for fans here in Australia, but even across the socials, you can kind of see that interest and love for the band has kind of grown exponentially in the last 12 months or so. Are you guys, I don't want to say surprised by the success, because obviously you work hard, you do a good job, but is it interesting to see how popular the band is continuing to get the more that you're putting the music out?
That's very sweet, thanks. I feel like anytime anybody is like, I like one of your songs, it blows me away. Like, it just, because it's something that is so literally like our voice and our, you know, our expression of it. So it's just like when anybody resonates with it, like even on the smallest scale, you're just like, whoa, that's such a crazy thing. Like, you know, it's so, making music is always for us, like we're just doing it not even like to make money. It's just been the thing we love. So like when people like it or are at a show or like streaming it or tell you about how much it means, like your song means to them, it literally feels like an like a cherry on top of already a dream of just making music, which is already so great. So no, man, we're super, I feel like we're just feel really blessed and stoked to be able to travel the world and play our tunes and, you know, meet cool people. It's awesome.
That is incredible to hear. Obviously, getting way ahead of ourselves. I know, I think it's Sydney. There's one more show in Melbourne as well on this tour. You're playing?
I think.
Or you've played in Melbourne?
No, there's no Melbourne.
I might have.
But hopefully soon.
Crossed my wires there at some point, so I apologize.
I'd love to do a tour in Australia, though.
That's kind of where I was going with it, was that once the debut album comes out, can we expect maybe a fuller tour? Come visit us in Adelaide.
Yeah. No, I think Australia, like, we always talk about it. Like, I think across the board, like, if we could, if we couldn't live in America, like, if we could move, we'd all want to be here. So obviously coming to tour is like a dream, and actually seeing going over to Perth, you know, Melbourne and Brisbane and all of it would be a dream. So hopefully soon.
Look, fingers crossed, and I'm very excited for that debut album when it does come out. Gentlemen, we would usually ask, I guess, what they're currently listening to. We can go down the line, whichever order you'd like to go. If you'd like to advise what you're currently listening to, what's on high rotation for yourself at the moment.
Cool, yeah. There's a band called Geese from New York. I've listened to them a lot, their new album.
I'll do two Aussie bands. Amel and the Sniffers, which credit to Cole, he showed us them. We, our van doesn't have an aux, so we only can listen to CDs on the very long road trips we do. So thank you, Cole, for Amel and the Sniffers, Aussie band. And then also another punk band from Sydney, they're called GT, that I really like.
Nice.
Yeah.
And then I've been enjoying the new Jungle album, so yeah.
Nice. It's a good kind of cross-section of... different bands.
Yeah.
Kind of touching on different points.
Right.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. Very much appreciate your time coming in, and congrats on Coast to Coast and the single.
Thank you, Simon.
Yeah. Of course. Please welcome Sarah Kinsley. Hello, how are you doing?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
No, totally, thank you. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. I know that this week has been a little bit crazy for you here in Australia. It is South by Southwest. How is your South by week going so far?
It's been great. Yeah, we played at the Universal House at Barney's Church yesterday, which was really fun. The space is, like, very, very beautiful.
Very cool space.
It's really massive. Yeah, it doesn't really feel anything like a church at all, which is funny. But yeah, we're doing that. We're playing a show tomorrow in the park, which I think will be open to the public, but is still sort of, like, South By related. So I'm actually really stoked for that, just to, yeah, play an afternoon set in the park.
That's very exciting. I know that there is a lot of excitement around your shows here in Australia this week. I don't think it's your first trip to Australia, but it's, I want to say the first music trip to Australia.
It's the first business trip, yeah, yeah, totally, totally.
How have the crowds been reacting? I did see someone... I think it was like an influencer. They did post your set at Universal Music House last night.
Oh, I haven't seen it yet. The real, like, genuine reactions that I've seen of, like, us kind of being here are definitely the fans that really get to the front during the sets. During our Universal show, at the showcase last night, there was just, like, a line of people sort of gathered by the front, because it's a very long stage, but it goes pretty far back, and... everyone was so ready to sort of move and dance and be led into the music and the show for, you know, 20, 30 minutes. And, yeah, I thought the energy was just very fantastic. And, yeah, it was just, it was really sweet to see people always singing the words, like, especially in a place that's very far from home.
Of course. Well, I know there's a lot of excitement about the Ascension EP, which is out at the moment, which is your EP. Congratulations on that, by the way.
Thank you. Thanks.
Is it weird, like, when you are traveling and going overseas to countries that, as we said, it's a business trip, so not the first time, but is it weird to see people singing along to some of these songs or, like, really getting into these songs?
Yeah, it's definitely really jarring, I think, more in a really good way, just in the sense of it's very easy to forget the fact that the people who are listening to music are people, and people who sit with music and memorize it and it kind of lives with them. So to see that reflected during a show with people knowing exactly what I'm going to say next, knowing the build of the song, knowing the structure of it, it's like a familiarity that I'm always really surprised by, because it's just like we don't know each other, but also we do. Like, this person clearly knows the sort of ins and outs of me, like, very well, I think, because of this sort of bond that we have through my music. So it always does feel a bit jarring to watch it happen or play out in real time.
I can very much appreciate that. I do have to, I do have to say, and not simply because you're sitting here with us, do love your music. The EP is fantastic.
Thank you.
I think that there is something to be said about some of these songs, because when initially having a listen to this EP, I was quite surprised in terms of not only the sonics of it, which I want to touch on in a little bit, but your voice as well, only because I feel like it's a very kind of like old soul kind of voice. And for someone who, to my understanding, you only just recently graduated university.
Yeah.
Congrats on that, by the way.
thank you.
I was so surprised. I guess this old voice coming out of such a young musician. Has that always been the case in terms of your voice and your kind of songwriting?
It's really funny. I think when I was younger and starting to write music, it reflected a lot of sort of the general, like, being naive as a young person is a universal thing. It doesn't affect like only me, you know. But I think when I really kept going with writing and trying to go deeper within myself, I started to get like that comment pretty frequently of like, it sounds like you're singing about things that have existed for many years, or like attaching yourself to things that kind of go beyond youth while still talking about it. So I don't know if it's always been a thing or if it's something that I'm slowly coming into, but I know what you're talking about. It's almost hard to paraphrase because it's like, I don't think that I sound old, but I know what you're saying.
Yes, let me please make very clear. You do not sound elderly in any capacity.
And I wouldn't be offended if I did, is the thing. It's more like, I think it's more about nostalgia, which has a lot to do with time.
Perfect.
And about just general like age and where you are in life that maybe is what people who listen to my music cling on to, which I don't disagree with at all. I think it's like nostalgia is a huge theme in things that I write about or think about even. So it makes sense that we would just attach it to sounding older or I don't know. I'm not sure.
No. I 100% kind of agree with what you're saying. Can you talk us through, I guess, your first interaction with songwriting or what originally attracted you to writing lyrics and writing music?
Yeah, I think I started writing in a diary just at a really young age, and that was a good way to sort of word vomit because you have so much emotions as a kid, and so much of the original stuff that I first wrote was really, really dramatic. Just, like, insane how I thought, how horrible I thought my life was because someone didn't like me back or something when I was 8. But I would write in this diary a lot and write to myself or write to a future self or write to my friends. And I think that was a part of my life for a long time and like fiction writing in general. And then when I turned maybe like 11 or 12, I became really obsessed with just pop music. Like I lived in Singapore for about 5 years, like during this age range, and like top 200 radio was like such a big thing. And American culture was such a big thing there. Mm-hmm. And then at least the school that I went to. And so I felt like my life was just constantly revolving around what was playing on the radio. And I feel like there was just a very natural connection between me as someone who was raised as a classical musician, listening to the radio and then starting to write. And it was just like, it made sense to go in that direction, you know? The first songs that I wrote, I might still have the old notebooks like in my parents' basement somewhere. They're like he thinks I'm invisible, so there, like, therefore I am, like something. Like, I don't even know the definition of the word therefore, but just using big words to write. It was helpful as a kid, I think, to write.
For a lot of songwriters that we've spoken to, there is a lot of, I think you've used the word like naivety before, and it's not even just that, but it is like you're working out how to express yourself and how to say things, and it's an incredibly useful tool to kind of have those early journals and notebooks so you can later articulate in a much more expressive way, I guess.
No, totally. Like I might be saying the exact same sentiment now of like feeling invisible, but I can say it in a way that's a little bit more ambiguous or nuanced.
Exactly, yes.
Instead of just saying like I'm a ghost or something. Yeah. No, I think it is good, and I feel very grateful that I sort of was able to think about music in that way as a kid and to have the tools of like being a a trained musician from a really young age, but then not knowing how to use my voice, and that being an odd switch, or how to use like lyrics to express what I was thinking, when for the most part, like all of the music that I was using to express myself was purely through instruments or through like a violin or the piano or an orchestra. Like a lot of the emotions that I felt were purely sonic. It had nothing to do with lyrical quality. So it was like a really weird change to go through and to figure out, but I think it's like the same avenue of learning how to actually just get an emotion out of you, you know, whether it's through like language or not.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would love to kind of know, and this fascinates me, because I know that you are a multi-instrumentalist. I know that you are a producer and a big advocate for women producers as well. Mm-hmm. And I do want to talk about that, but I also want to begin this with, because I saw it online and it is fascinating to me. Is it, I'm going to maybe mispronounce it, is it the contact pads?
Yeah, totally right. Yeah.
Where did that come from? Or like how do they work?
Yeah, so my sort of origin story with them was just when I was a student in university, learning about these discs. They're called like piezo discs, but it's like a brass plate that kind of has two layers within it. And you can kind of put it against, like, you could put it against this wall. This is actually a really thick wall, so you couldn't, if it was a really hollow wall, you could put the disc against the wall, and then someone who's either inside the wall or on the other side, you know, you could make noises and transmit sound. So they've been used, like, a lot of guitar pickup mics are a similar technology, or mics for violins, but it's all sort of the same thing of sending an audio signal through, like, copper or brass or some sort of material. So like that table would be a really good one to kind of hit, or you could put it on like a metal plate and then make sounds on the plate, and it would sound completely different than if you put it on a wood plate.
Because in the video, the videos I think I saw, are you humming while you're wearing them?
I am, yeah. So I learned about them in school, and I made a bunch of them in different classes I took, and a professor that I was really close to, and he showed us one day this video of someone kind of throat singing with the mic in or around their throat, which is a really extreme version of like what I think I'm doing. Mm-hmm. But that was super inspiring, and so I was like, oh, I want to try this. So I started taping the mics around me and trying to figure out. But it's just humming, and then you can send obviously that audio signal into any sort of software and then place any effects on it. So the actual signal itself, it's pretty dry. It just sounds like someone has like their hand over your mouth, or like you're in like a box talking. But I just enjoy the fact that the vibration comes directly from my throat, and then it feels really close to me in a way. So like I've really only used that mic on songs that are really vulnerable or really very personal, because it does sound like a sort of scream sigh that is coming really deeply out of me, even though it's just a noise that I could make in other ways.
I think that's what it was. It was, I almost want to use the word like haunting when I'm watching, in a good way, positive
way. I agree. And it depends on the effects that I'll put on it. I think like I've chosen to go into these like very specific reverbs that do feel very haunting and kind of cave-like and droney.
Yes, yeah.
And there's some very cool reverbs that have been built by a lot of people, like just the presets that I use. Like it's free and it's nothing special, but it's the ability to create like such like terrifying sound almost, but when put over a piano, it happens to be very calming, I guess. Yeah. It's funny.
It's a weird juxtaposition almost of the two.
Yeah, totally.
The track of the most recent EP, Ascension, that I kind of found I kept revisiting was one that was haunting, was the title track, Ascension.
Yeah.
I was wondering whether you would indulge me a little bit and just, I guess, tell us a little bit about the inspiration behind that track.
Yeah, totally. I think I sort of had this inside joke with my partner and some other friends who like introduced this idea, but one of my friends who is a filmmaker and writer, we were both really obsessed with that film Portrait of a Lady on Fire, and the director Celine Sciamma had this interview related to the film where she talked about how the loss of love, whether it's a breakup or death or any sort of separation from a relationship, can be so devastating, because like the process of loving someone means that you create a language that only exists between the two of you. Mm-hmm. And so I was talking to my partner about this, and we kind of took this a step further of thinking about, oh, between us, like if there was like an island, a real tangible place where every one of our inside jokes or memories or stories lived, like what would that place look like? And you can, your mind sort of starts to run and imagine all of the things that you have, whether it's foods that you would talk about together or films you'd watch or things you'd speak about. But it's almost like if the island was like a tangible reincarnation of all of those things, so you could actually see them on this island. And we would talk about that idea really often, and it, that kind of idea was very haunting to me as something where you could almost like a very beautiful but very haunting paradise of where you could be. And the sort of metaphor of, like, you know, when you break up with someone or something doesn't work out, the idea of being left with this island was the sort of starting point for the idea for Ascension, because I was so, like, I was really entrenched in that idea of, like, when, you know, if we don't happen to love each other or live together anymore, like, what's going to happen? I'll just be stuck in this sort of deserted place with all of these things around me. And so Ascension is kind of about putting this sort of relationship that I'm in almost in the past tense of, like, okay, you loved me, but I have all of these things. And the idea of waking up every day with them, almost in like a sort of Groundhog Day situation that's like a blessing and a curse, that idea was just so potent to me, and I just couldn't stop thinking about it. And it's why I called the EP Ascension. But yeah, it's really about that.
It is an incredible track, so thank you for sharing
that
with me.
Thank you.
I'm
glad you like it. Thanks.
I know that you've obviously been playing some shows here in Australia for South By. I believe that there's some shows later this year with a small and upcoming artist named Mitski, who, looking forward to how you're feeling about those shows, because I imagine that's, I want to assume, is pretty exciting.
Yeah, you know, I feel like I'm like really doing this small artist a favor by like joining their tour.
Very kind of you. Yeah.
I know, yeah, taking time out of our busy lives. No, I was very shocked when the offer came in, just because I think Mitski is someone who, like, I have sort of idolized for a long time, not only as her as, like, a really incredible writer, but, and, like, someone who I think is truly, like, a tour de force of our generation of people who write, but also just someone who is, like, the first person who I really saw who even resembled me in the slightest, who was making insane, crazy music, music that would make you uncomfortable, music that would, like, really, I don't know, stir people up. And that was really, I don't know, invigorating for me. But yeah, it's very weird to think about us sharing the same stage. Like, I have been thinking about that and trying to think, like, what am I going to say to someone who I just have, like, almost too many thoughts about, you know? Like, what do I do? But yeah, I think I'm just very excited to experience that.
Of course. I will, even just as a fan of both yourself and of Mitski, I'm very excited just to, they're happening in the US, so any US fans, please keep an eye out for those. But even from a distance from Australia, very excited to see how those shows go, because I believe it will be a brilliant double bill. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Please welcome Gabe and Ash from Foley. Hello.
Hello.
How are we?
How are you going?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. Yeah, we're really happy to be here.
I'm
sunny
very...
Sydney.
It's really... we've really brought out the weather.
Yeah.
Question mark.
Well, we've been here for a little while and the weather has been insane. Like, we've had a couple of 35-degree days and we've been cooking on the beach, just enjoying it. So a couple of days off of the sun is actually okay. We'll take it.
How has your, other than the sun and obviously today's the weird one exception, I think tomorrow's back to normal, how has the week been here at South By?
It's been great, yeah. It's definitely a whirlwind. I think, like, the schedule gets pretty busy pretty quick, but we always love, like, obviously it's great to come here and play ourselves and meet people, but also just watching all the other acts and seeing, you know, like, a small snippet of what their show is just so inspiring and so cool. Like, we get lots of ideas and soak up all the vibes. So, yeah, it's been good so far, but ready for another few days.
I was speaking to Gabe just before. South By seems to be this... like amalgamation of music, tech, film, arts all together, where it's not just bands that you're seeing. You do get to kind of put your feelers out into other interesting areas. We were talking just before, I think you went to the NASA talk today.
I just watched someone from NASA talk about living on the moon. It was really interesting. You know, what food they're going to grow. Apparently buckwheat.
Interesting.
Yeah, so we're all going to be eating buckwheat pancakes on the moon in the future.
Oh,
so,
yum.
Yeah, I can get behind that. Moon caves. Yeah, but it's like being at the ICCU, like, and all around Sydney for South By, like, you bump into all these random people from tech and, you know, AI and, like, film and media. There's everything going on. So it's, like, it's quite fun when you're in the midst of it because, like, you'd never bump into these people otherwise.
Which is very fair. Is there anything else kind of left on your list of things non-musical related that you want to check out?
Ooh, non-musical related. There's a lot of AI stuff, eh?
I'm not sure why. Yeah.
I actually have gotten really fascinated with AI because I went to like an AI expo in New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
And this is crazy. There was like just some crazy stories about AI and like people falling in love with AI bots and like... But just it just blew my mind. It just was wild. Very long story, but... I definitely got like a bit of a fascination. So I would love to try and go to some of the AI stuff that's happening, but it just gets so busy so quick and you're jetting all around and suddenly it's like, it's 5 o'clock, we've got a show on and it's just, yeah, but hopefully there'll be time.
I'm so fascinated by AI and some of the things that we've been talking about and I don't want to...
We could go on a tangent.
We could go on a much bigger conversation about that, so we won't. I do want to chat about the gigs that you guys have had so far. I believe there's still a few coming up, one today, one tomorrow. But there was one last night, which, who was it? A friend of the podcast, David James Young, he was filming yourself on.
Yeah.
Yep. And it looked insane. It looked like that gig was going off. How was the show?
It was fun. Yeah. It was really fun. It was kind of, it was like a venue that's not usually a venue called the Sneaky Possum. And upstairs, it was kind of, it felt like a flat party sort of. It was almost like a house where they'd propped a PA up. And but it actually sounded pretty good, I think. Yeah. Like the space was pretty cool. But yeah, a lot of energy. And David coming along, he's got so much energy as well.
The man has a lot of energy.
It was so great. Yeah, it was so awesome to see him. And like, I feel like he actually is like a hype guy in the crowd.
Yeah,
he's like our sleeper cell that goes in and like gets everybody hyped for us. So no, it was awesome. We had a great time and looking forward to tonight at 5 p.m. at the Doc Martin House, and then tomorrow at the New Zealand House, which will be really cool. So yeah, looking forward to them.
These shows, from all accounts that I've heard, as I mentioned to you guys before, I've only flown in today, but the shows have been fantastic, so I'm looking forward to trying to check you guys out tomorrow night at the New Zealand House because I think that's going to be incredible. You are here in support of the fantastic debut record, Crowd Pleaser, from Foley. Congratulations on that record.
Thank you.
How are you feeling now the record is out? I know it's been out for a little while, but what's the reception been like? How are you guys feeling?
It feels great. I mean, like, you know, we were working on that record for a long time and getting it right, getting the right tracks on it, getting the sort of creative vision in the world that we wanted to show people, you know, down to a T. And it's been really nice having it out in the world and people, like, appreciating that for what it is, like the body of work and the piece of art that it is. We just had a lot of friends and a lot of family and a lot of fans telling us how, like, much it means to them and, like, you know, what they got out of this song or that song. And so that's really satisfying. Yeah, that's really, really cool.
Were you surprised at the reaction of, not at the reaction of positivity, but just then when you said family or friends being like, oh, I love this song, I love this song. Is there a track that, I guess, that has resonated with people that you're surprised at that was kind of like, oh, that was... We thought this of this song and it's ended up being like a crowd favourite.
Like that happens all the time. Like, honestly, we think we know what our fans want and we never do. Like, it's so hard to guess, you know? Like, earlier on in the album campaign, we released a song called Visualize that we thought was kind of more of like a, you know, a cruisy little curveball that people were going to be like, oh, yeah, that's cool, but it maybe wouldn't have been the favourite. And the response to that was crazy, you know? So I just, I feel like we can never pick it. But on the album, the lead single that came out with it, What Got Into You, that's like the oldest song, the first song we wrote that's ended up on the record. So I feel like by the time it came out, I'd almost it felt like it was had already been out for such a long time. I don't know, I just got kind of confused by it. Yeah. And then when it came out on the album, the response to that has been so great. And I kind of was, I don't know why I didn't expect it, but it was like, oh, but that's an old song. I don't know. I think you get kind of messed up in your own head when you're so close to it. So
you've been living with it for a while, so I imagine that it's that thing of that when it's fresh to new people's ears, that it's like, oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, this is new to you guys. Like, what? You know, I just, yeah. But no, the response has just been so amazing. And like Gabe said, to finally have it out, like the whole creative concept and, you know, to be able to present the whole thing, it's just such a nice feeling. And yeah, obviously a really lovely moment as well to kind of stop and like celebrate and 100%. And enjoy the moment, because you don't do that very often. So
it's the debut record. You kind of have to be able to enjoy that moment.
Yeah, yeah, pop some bubbles and have a little, you know?
I hope that there were some bubbles and a few, cutting some shapes.
There was definite bubbles, yeah.
There were some shapes for sure.
Yeah.
As we've said, it's a debut record. I'm curious how you guys kind of got together in terms of we're predominantly at like a songwriting podcast. Mm. How you guys kind of began making music together and writing songs?
Yeah, I think Ash and I have been writing as individual songwriters in different bands, you know, well before Foley, you know, all through high school and things. But when we started Foley, we were both kind of fascinated with the idea of writing pop music and like the way that that's structured and like all the rules that you have to follow and like
or break
and have to, you know, like distill emotions and meaning into like as few words and as few melodies as possible. Neither of us came from pop backgrounds, so when we started writing together, it was just this really like fresh new thing to both of us, and we kind of, you know, stumbled through it, figured out how to do it, like, you know, wrote some terrible
songs.
Wrote some really good songs. And sort of just delved into the world like that, trying to perfect like a craft that we were fascinated by.
I'm so curious by that now. What were the respective genres or fields that you guys kind of came from before?
Well, I was studying music at the time at university, so I was kind of in the, I suppose, like neo soul space. I was going through a big like Hiatus Coyote type energy sort of phase, I guess. Well, not phase, but you know, that was really what was big for me, and I was surrounded by all the jazz players in the university, so that was kind of my world. And then Gabe was in the sort of like punk rock sort of energy, so it's funny to have landed in pop. But I think like the challenge of it has always been so motivating for us. Like, it is so hard.
This is something that we've spoken to a few artists about, which I am fascinated by, is the fact that I guess there's this perception that pop music is like easy or not like throw away, but that it's this thing that, oh, anyone can do pop music. And it's actually such a tough thing to do well, which you guys do very well. I had to throw that in there.
Hope so at this point,
But no, it's kind of the opposite for us, at least. I mean, I'm sure there's some people that pop is like the most natural thing they could ever write, and they might find something else challenging. But I think in a way, like, you're so exposed with pop, like you're trying to say something. You know, the whole goal is to connect with people, really. I feel like that's the heart of pop music, is like to connect with a decent sized audience that are going to understand what you're saying, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And it leans less into like the really metaphorical, poetic, where sometimes people might not even have any clue, you know, for other genres.
Definitely an art form in itself.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. But I think, yeah, you kind of, if you're trying to say something and people still don't get it, it's like, well, then you haven't achieved the goal of the song necessarily.
Well, that's not, yeah, it might not be pop music.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's fine. But trying to, as I was saying before, like distill those emotions into that thing is so complex without, you know, making it basic or
generic or
cheesy or whatever. There's all these things, you're sort of towing this line between intricacy and like, you know, general stuff, you know, and it's really hard.
That's the kind of thing that we have discussed with people, is that it's this thing that is such a, not like a difficult beast almost, but like this thing that I think deserves way more credit for writing good pop music. Again, not saccharine, not cheesy, but like well-crafted pop music, which again Foley do quite well. For yourselves, do you have anyone that you look up to in terms of that kind of pop world or pop writing world?
I really look up to Tove Lo. I think she's, which is Tove Lo is actually how you say her name, and I've said it wrong on stage opening for her. But I think she has a really beautiful way of saying it as it is, but also having like so much personality and so much like zest in her lyrics, and like a really unique flavor to what she does. I find I'm just always captivated by her, even if she's saying something that you could perceive as quite simple, you know. It's just always simple in a way that like you could never have said yourself, you know. And I think that's and it, I mean, as a melodic writer as well, I think her melodies are always same thing, like really simple, but I never could have come up with it myself. So yeah, love her. I mean, there's so many.
Yeah, I'm just running through like a list in my head, and I can't really.
I mean, Remy's a big one for us as well.
Remy Wolf is a big one, and I was just thinking back to when we first started Folly, like the Ariana Grande record, like Dangerous Woman, like is like so well produced, like all of the melodies and all the lyrics is really really tight. So that was like a really interesting case study.
Yeah, Victoria Monet, one of the writers on that album.
Yeah,
incredible writer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many, and I think, like, I love when you find, a bunch of artists that you really love, and then there's a songwriter who's the common denominator, because it's cool now that you can actually find that out really easily, like, you can see, and you start seeing the same names of people coming up on songs, and it's like, I love these artists, but maybe it's this writer I actually really like.
Yeah, like Ian Kirkpatrick.
Yeah, you know, Ilse Juba, I remember seeing Ilse Juba come up on, like, I don't know if that's actually how you say her name, I think so, but seeing her come up on lots of records and being like, who is this girl? She's just on everything and so talented. So, yeah.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
The list just goes on.
Who is it? There's I know one very popular Australian songwriter, Sarah Ahrens as well, I think people know from, gosh, like
everything.
Yeah. Flume, Miley Cyrus, there's a whole range of different records that she's on, but it is cool now that you can kind of access that and see how songwriters work, and I think they're getting a lot more recognition as well, which is cool. Do you guys have any desire to write for anyone else? Is there any ever...
Yeah, we do quite a lot of that. Yeah, we do lots of that, because I think collaboration is like really at the heart of pop music, but also like a lot of music now, you know? Yeah. A lot of genres that have pop sensibilities across the vocal in particular, you know? So, yeah, we do lots of writing for other acts, and I think it keeps you kind of, like, on your toes a little bit, like having to flex those muscles with different people and different goals for the song, and, you know, like, you... And it also, if you're writing pop music all the time, it can be really refreshing to write something different, and I've really been wanting, and I think Gabe's the same, I think you mentioned this the other day, really wanting to write some country music.
Ooh.
Because I feel like that, like the narrative in country lyrics is always so strong, and like often what we will be writing is more like not necessarily telling a story from start to finish. It's like a feeling and a situation, and like, you know, you want it to be clear in that sense, but it's not like the verse is the start, the second verse is the middle, and the last parts that, you know? Because I love with country music, it feels like there's such a strong narrative. So, yeah, I'd love to do a bit of country. Get my yeehaw cowboy hat on, eh?
Love this. I think country music as well, almost what you were saying before, there are times where that can be almost too saccharine as well. So it's, I feel like there's a...
Yeah.
definite line
maybe
to walk
it's the
there.
Same challenge
speaking of AI, one of the things that I've been doing recently to just train my brain and just have some fun is I tell ChatGPT to write me a country song, so mm-hmm. it spits out all these lyrics, and then I go onto YouTube and find like country instrumental beats, and I listen to the beat and I try and sing the lines and I try and make a song on the fly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Are you actually doing that?
I'm actually doing
that. You've got too much free time, Gabe.
It's so fun. It takes like 30 seconds.
Out of curiosity, what's the success rate like been so far?
I don't know. They're all successful in my head.
Well, I haven't heard any of them, so I feel like they're not good enough to share.
The record's out next week.
Yeah. Cowboy Gabe is coming out.
Or is it already out?
Ooh. Are you Mason Ramsey in disguise?
I love that guy. Mason Ramsey.
Another tangent.
I went to a Halloween party as Mason Ramsey. He's an idol.
I don't want to put you on the spot to do this. Do you have the ability to yodel? I won't ask you to do it. No. But like, no. Okay. Fair enough. Yep.
You just went for it. I cannot.
I feel like it's like a feeling that I could not.
It's a lifestyle.
Ever imagine? Yeah.
It's really a lifestyle.
Oh man.
Talking about Mason Ramsey, it's a bit of a weird segue. We would usually ask, I guess, what they're currently listening to, other than Mason Ramsey and AI Mason. Country. Is there anything at the moment that's kind of on high rotation on either of your streaming services or record players, however you consume music?
I've gotten really into Royal Otis,
mm-hmm.
who obviously I feel are a bit of a hot name at South By, which is interesting.
They are this week,
there's a panel about them. And
some flames on your pants.
Sheesh! Yeah. fully fell in love with them. Mm. I feel like I've gotten onto them kind of late, but, yeah, they're amazing. And then also Delwater Gap.
Mm. Yes.
Yeah, big fan. I feel like my algorithm has all of a sudden changed on, like, I don't know if you ever noticed that you'll be listening to all the same stuff and the algorithm's giving you really similar stuff. And then all of a sudden you start getting these curveballs and, like, have a big music discovery moment. And I don't know if that's on purpose. I'm sure there's a panel that will tell us. But, just all of a sudden discovered both of those guys and a few others in that kind of camp. And, yeah, I think they're all such great songwriters and great voices and, like, really cool production style as well, like, kind of pushing their genres a bit. And, yeah, awesome. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, both of those as well. But I've been really listening to a lot of George Duke at the moment, who's like a 70s, 80s kind of jazz, soul, R&B guy, who I listened to a lot back in the day, like 2016, 2017, when I was like first getting into funk music. So it's nice to come back and like listen through his discography, but I don't know, just expanding the horizons.
The gamut of music that we've crossed today, I absolutely love. I think like Mason Ramsey, Ariana Grande, George Duke.
Yeah.
It's
everywhere.
Delwater Gap, it's just incredible.
The thing is that at the heart of it, it's all pop music, right?
True. Think
about it.
I don't know if George Duke is pop music.
He's written some hits.
I think you've tied that together quite well. I think I might hand over the mic, and if you want to host the... I think you did that better than I did.
Pass the torch.
Yeah, I'm going to head out. If you want to... Ash and Gabe, thank you very much for hanging out with us today. The new Foley record is Crowd Pleaser, and it is out right now. We'll have it in the links of where all of this ends up, which is the podcast and YouTube, but thank you again.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having us.
My pleasure.
Nice to meet you.
It's lovely to meet you guys. Please welcome Hayley from Sightface. Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
Thank you. I'm good.
Thank you so much for coming to join us this morning. I know it's been an incredibly busy week for everyone. We are here in the midst of South by Southwest. I know that you're just here as an attendee. Is there anything that you've seen so far that kind of stands out for you?
Yeah, last night was my first night actually attending showcases, but I saw a band called Stumps that were really good. They're kind of like lovely. Talking Heads-y. Mm-hmm. I like them a lot. And then I checked out a new artist called Logan that's kind of like new Elvis, modern Elvis.
I have heard that, yeah.
It was really cool, yeah.
That's awesome. I know that there's so much going on this week, which is kind of crazy, but it's nice to see like the music community kind of coming together and like networking, chatting, supporting one another.
Yeah, for sure. It's always nice to like bump into everybody that you've ever met in the music business on the same night.
As I mentioned, you're not performing at South by Southwest, but you just do happen to be in Australia at the moment on a bit of a writing trip and in promotion of a brilliant new single, Fight Back Time, with the Boys, which I want to get to in a second. But how is your Australian trip treating you so far?
It's been really good. This is like the middle of week two for me. I flew in from Oslo kind of at the beginning of October to start doing press with the Boys. And then I've been writing for Slut Face with Australian producers and songwriters, and then also for Australian artists as a co-writer while I've been here.
Oh, cool.
So that's been really fun. I've only been to Australia to play shows with Slut Face once before in 2017, and that was such a short, like, whirlwind trip of less than a week, so it's been so nice to actually get to, like, settle in and meet people and kind of get a feel for the whole Australian scene, especially, like, the Indian rock scene. Yeah.
That's awesome to hear. I know that... actually, what is the flight time from Oslo?
So coming here, it's really long because you lose those... 12 or like you gain 12 hours. So it took almost like 40 hours to get here, which was a long trip, but home is much easier because I fly out of Melbourne and that's a much faster trip.
Okay, that's good to hear. I'm glad that you are here for an extended period then to make that kind of very long trip worth it.
Yeah, because last time we did the same and it was like 2 or 3 days of travel on each end, and it was only like a 5 or 6 day trip in between, and you don't really have time to like reset.
No, you're literally like just making sure that you're like one foot in front of the other at that point.
Yeah, definitely. I remember I had just started dating my current partner at the time, and we had like, he was also on tour, and we were like competing about who had the darkest circles under their eyes for that week. Yeah.
Who was there, a clear winner or just?
No, I think we were pretty even, but yeah, no one was winning that game.
As I mentioned, there's a brand new single with the Boys out called Fight Back Time. Yeah. It's a brilliant new track. Congratulations on
that.
Thank you. I know that this was originally, I think, kind of the foundations of the song were written by yourself and one or two producers who you usually collaborate with. And then it was not put on the shelf, but it kind of, you stopped working on it for a little bit until... linking up with Zoe from the Boys?
Yeah, because it was like we're working on the next full-length Slut Face record that'll come out sometime next year. And I had written Fight Back Time in London with Paul Wally and Michael Champion, who are really talented songwriters and producers who I'm a really big fan of. And I kind of felt like Fight Back Time wouldn't necessarily fit in with the rest of the album because it's a bit more poppy than a lot of the other stuff that's on the record. And then, like, the idea of having the Boys feature on it came across, like, my emails, and I was like, that's going to be so good. That'll be amazing. and Zoe and I met up over Zoom pretty quickly, and I think we both, like, related to the themes of the song really quickly and felt like the chemistry was there, which is kind of important if you're going to, like, write with someone.
Yeah.
So I think it felt just instantly really good and, like, the right place for us to both be.
That's awesome. I do love that. I was very curious, I guess, yeah, how the collaboration happened, because I wouldn't have necessarily put the two bands together previously, but then it does seem to just kind of make sense when you're listening to the track, when you're looking at the discography of both bands.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of like it's a little bit of a different track for both of our bands too, so it was nice, I think, for both of us to do something kind of fresh, which is like the benefit of doing a standalone single where you can pour a lot of energy into just one song instead of worrying too much about like the context of a whole record. Mm-hmm. So I think, yeah, I knew that that a good idea to like give that song life would be to do it as a duet or a feature with another artist, and we were kind of like thinking about what other artists that could possibly be, and I really wanted to do it with an Australian band because I hoped that that would maybe get me over here, because I had really wanted to come back since 2017. So and then the Boys just seemed like such a perfect fit.
I know before you mentioned that you're here working with Australian producers and also writing for some Australian artists while you're here.
Yeah.
I obviously don't want to get anyone in trouble. We're not going to dox anyone that you're secretly working with. But in terms of, I guess, before you came here this time around, what was the research method like in terms of working out which Australian producers you wanted to work with, or kind of listening to certain Australian bands or artists?
kind of more like stuff that is like suggested to me through my publishers that might be a fun thing to do, but I do try to look for stuff that might not be the same as what I do with Slutface, because that's kind of the the biggest challenge, or like the thing I feel like I learn most from. So when I co-write with others, it's not necessarily like all rock or indie based. I do like a lot of, in Norway, I do a lot of pop stuff and singer-songwriter stuff, and yeah, as a songwriter, I'm like what we call a top liner. So I you know, write lyrics and write melodies and stuff. So it's really fun to come and do that for totally other genres of music than what I normally work on.
I'm always fascinated by that, only because it's like flexing, I guess, so many different muscles songwriting-wise that you can kind of like almost put on like a different hat each day. Like,
yeah, and I think that's because I only started co-writing for other artists during the pandemic, because I was kind of at a little bit of a crossroads in my life after some of the members that I'd started Slutface with had left, and I was kind of wondering if maybe I should do something completely different with my life, or like become a nurse instead or something, because it was in the middle of the pandemic and that seemed more useful than being a musician at that point. So I was like kind of trying to figure out how I could maybe take sort of my career as a musician into the next phase of my life, because I turn 30 next year, and you kind of need a little bit of a different sense of stability as you get older. So that, and I like writing lyrics and being in the studio is one of my favorite parts of being in Slutface, and always has been. So I felt like this was a really good chance to spend even more time in those places and kind of like write even more lyrics and just like produce even more music than what I'll be able to release as Slutface, because you're kind of like, you can pump out quite a few releases if you want to write a lot, but there's still like limits if it's just your own project.
Of course, of course. When you are looking for like collaborators, I guess, is there any kind of key, I don't want to say personality trait, but like key feature, key kind of piece with a collaborator that you know you'll work best with?
Yeah, there are like a couple different things. Like I like to try everything, and I feel like even sessions where like I don't necessarily feel like I did my best work, or maybe I had like kind of a slow brain day, even those sessions I feel like I learn a lot from. But I think my best days for me with like the things that I feel best at are like working with people that want to work kind of quickly and like get as many ideas down as quickly as possible. I'm not very much of like I don't enjoy, because that's how kind of Slutface used to work when there were four of us writing everything together in a room. And I think I kind of like filled my quota of working very like agonizing over every chord and every sentence. And I kind of would rather write two fast songs than one verse in a day at this point.
Yeah.
So that's key for me, is kind of like working with people that enjoy that like speed as well. And then I also, as like a top liner who's not, I'm not a very good instrumentalist at anything. I can kind of like muddle through if I have to, but I love to work with people like who are either, you know, really good guitarists or piano players, and along with a good producer, and then me top lining, because then I feel like we kind of balance each other's skill sets out the best. But like, 100%. It's all pretty fun, to be honest. I really like it. I had a day, I was writing with a producer called Fletcher Matthews yesterday, and an artist from Canberra called Lucy Sugarman, and it was just like one of those days where you're like, I can't believe this is our job. This does not feel like work. This is so fun. Yeah.
I kind of love that there is still that magic within songwriting. I know sometimes with collaboration, and sometimes, as you said, when people are put forward to you, it can not necessarily feel like it is a job, but as you said, that it still retains that magic of like,
yeah. And of course that's different every day, and there are songs that I love more than others, or in songs where I kind of, especially in Norway, because my parents are American and English is my first language, so that the kind of like I'm still pretty fresh at all of this, but the niche that I'm kind of trying to build in Norway is like that I want to write English lyrics from the perspective of someone who has English as their first language, because not everybody in Norway has that. And that's the part that I think is most fun.
Yeah.
But like that also makes it really easy to work in genres that I wouldn't necessarily maybe listen to so much myself, because you can kind of like zoom in on one part of the puzzle kind of.
100%. I would love to know, I guess, just, we are like predominantly a songwriting podcast or media brand. Do you remember your first interaction with songwriting, or like what originally drew you to like writing lyrics?
I think I really relate to like artists like or songwriters like Lou Reed and Patti Smith, who've always said that like they, you know, they could have done any kind of creative thing and it happened to be songs, because for me it was always like words first, and I wrote a lot as a kid, like poems, and I was obsessed with like translating my favorite English like young adult books into Norwegian because they hadn't been released in Norwegian yet, so I spent a lot of time doing that. And then I have always loved music, and I think I kind of like fell into combining those two things, but my like even up until I was an adult, like my plan was never to be a musician or a songwriter full time. It was kind of just like a thing that I did. But we have like I think my very first time of ever attempting to write a song, like with both the words and the music, was in Europe for Eurovision. We also have Junior Eurovision, which is like the kids' version of the competition.
Yeah.
And I remember trying very hard for a lot of my childhood to write a song for like the Junior Eurovision, because I thought that sounded seemed like so much fun. So that was like my first attempt.
I'm not going to make you recount. Do you remember the name of it?
I'm sure it was like about pets or something. Yeah,
I love that though. That's you know, it's songwriting in its purest form when it's like straight from the heart. Yeah. There's no filter on that.
Yeah.
thank you for sharing that. Again, we won't make you sing or divulge any other part of it. In terms of, so I guess further new music from Slutface.
Yeah.
Can we expect more music, I guess, in the next 6 to 12 months?
Yeah, there'll be stuff coming out next year that's Slutface songs. We're mixing our next full-length record right now, so we're pretty close to having that be finished, which I'm kind of like trying to work on from a very different time zone while I'm here, so it's interesting. But yeah, that we think that'll be done before Christmas and probably released next year sometime.
That's very exciting, and it seems like a little bit of an obvious question, so I apologize.
Go.
but while we do have you here in Australia, and we know that you're not playing shows, can we expect that you'll come back and play some shows here in Australia?
That's like kind of another purpose of this trip, is to try to set that up for next year, because we would really, really like to come back. My whole band is, it was like a little bit too expensive to bring everybody for this trip because we didn't have like a tour planned, but they're very jealous and would really like to be here because it just dipped down to like 3 degrees and rain all the time in Oslo. So I've been sending them pictures of like being at the beach on the weekend, and they've been like, you better bring us next time. So yeah, we really hope that we can all come back next year. Like our dream would be to do like Australian festival summer, because that's also our winter, so that would be amazing for us.
Well, fingers crossed that is what we get.
Yeah.
Hayley, thank you so much for chatting to us today. I appreciate it.
Really good chat. Thanks. A host knocker, a brim cracker, a hard rocker. I'm a pig hater, death to invader, and all the land takers, and all the treaty breakers, and all the dictators, and all manipulators.
Please welcome to this song is yours, Miss Kanina. Hello, how are we?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you so much for joining us at South by Southwest this week.
Yes, I'm so excited. This is actually my first podcast ever, so I'm super keen to come in here. And, you know, South by Southwest, I've never been before, and so it's just all like the hustle and bustle.
It's crazy at the moment. Have you been here all week?
No, actually, we just flew in yesterday. We were kind of a fly in, do the shows and fly out. I'm still poor at the moment, so it's not as though I can fly everyone here and we can all hang out and go to all the talks and stuff. You know, I'm still working a full-time job, so come in, do what we got to do and get the fuck out.
Similar to what we're doing. Podcasting is not the big money maker that everyone thinks it is, but yeah, I definitely get that, the kind of the hustle in, hustle out. Mm. I did see last night, I think you played a showcase.
I did.
Where was that? Where was the showcase you played last night?
Ali, what was the venue that we went to last night? Mulan Restaurant. But it was for the Laneway showcase, which
That's
was really
right.
cool.
Yes, yes. Yeah. How did it go?
It was really good. I had a little hiccup with a little tech thing, but which kind of like made me feel a little bit weird. But then I realized that like we're artists and we're doing live shows and it's not supposed to be perfect. I feel like when you have that kind of experience, it just kind of humanizes yourself a little bit more, because, you know, that's why people come to see live shows, because they want to connect with you more as like as a person rather than a robot. And I think that it definitely humbled me a little bit, because I was like, oh, fuck, you know. But apart from that, I showcased two new songs as well, which was fun. So, yeah, I really enjoyed it.
We've been talking to a few artists today, and, like, have you found that the crowds... Because it is, like, South By is this weird amalgamation of, like, festival. There's real life punters. There's industry people. Did you find that the crowd got into it, that they were able to, like, loosen up a bit?
I'm going to be honest. Things like this, like Big Sound and South By Southwest, where, you know, there's so many people showcasing and so many people are here for business, the crowds are very different, because when you go to watch an artist as a fan, you're there purely for the music because you love the music, you know, watch the music, and people are really attentive. Whereas here, people are choosing to do business, which I find is really disrespectful as an artist, you know. No disrespect to people specifically, but even with Big Sound and here, like, you're, you know, I'm here, like, I've worked really hard on making a 45-minute set or 30-minute set or whatever, and I'm sharing this with you, the least you could do is be quiet and watch.
Yeah.
And sometimes I feel like people don't realize that that's what's happening. You know, they go there, they choose to have meetings, you know, on the dance floor, which, you know, I kind of was like, all right, be quiet now. It's time to watch me.
Yeah.
Because it's not as though it's like a 9-to-5 job from Monday to Friday. It's like you only get to see me for 30 minutes once every couple of weeks or months or whatever, anything like that. So, yeah, I feel like the crowds are very, very different here. Because you have to realize that not everybody's eyes are going to be on you, but people are still listening. And I feel like working around that is definitely a skill that I have to learn.
I've always found it interesting that people do conduct, like, business interviews or meetings, like, while at gigs. It's so weird, right? Like, don't get me wrong. I get that it's obviously a busy time, but I'm like, unless you're getting a cut of that, I think that's the only fair way to kind of do it, right?
Yeah, and I also feel like, you know, cutting them a little bit of slack. Before I got into music, I was definitely that bitch that was, like, front left, who was, like, talking to my friends, like, you know, like, not really caring. And now that I'm doing music, I kind of have a more sense of respect for artists, because I'm kind of like, you know... Rara Zulu, one of my good friends from Melbourne, she's an incredible black artist. She actually brought that to my attention. Last year I went to go watch her. Actually, was it last year? I think it was the start of the year. She did a residency with the Izzy Boys at the Evelyn Hotel in Melbourne. And she spoke so well. She just said at the start of her gig, she said, if everyone could please be quiet during my set, I'm about to pour my heart out to you. I'm about to show you the work that I've worked really hard on. Please give me the respect and be quiet. And, you know, even if someone whispered in my ear, I feel like I was doing her a disservice by even engaging in that, because I did go there to watch her and I did go there to listen to that. And I feel like her saying that really installed in me more respect for artists in that sense.
It is an incredible kind of thing that a lot of artists are doing, because, as you said, like, there's so many artists playing this week. There's gigs, like, from 4 p.m. to, like, 11, 12
p.m. Yeah, it's crazy. Everywhere. And they're all spread out as well. It's not like in Big Sound where you walk down one road and it's, like, all there. It's like, y'all motherfuckers go to everywhere around the city.
There's so many gigs. So I understand, obviously, people have to kind of multitask, but it is nice when they can kind of show some respect to the artistry because, as you've said, there's a lot of hard work that's gone into that. I'd love to talk about your artistry.
Yay!
that's why we got you here. Yeah. It's been such an incredible year for you, I feel. There was the incredible Black Britney that came earlier this year.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say it was around May or June that it was released.
Was it May? Yeah, May. Yesterday I said March. Oh, that's crazy. May, it's only been out for 5 months. People are acting like it's been out for years.
I think it seems to be resonating with people, which is awesome.
Mm.
I'm a deadly bitch. A Black Britney Spears. I'm a deadly bitch. A Black Britney Spears. And I'ma tell them what they wanna hear. Downshift, third gear.
And we are back.
We are back. Technical issues.
Before we had to have a bit of a change of scenery, we were talking about how Britney Spears influenced Black Britney, but also how it was like not a reclaiming, but like you were articulating a lot better than I was.
Would you like me to go
yes,
again?
Please, yes.
Okay. It's really interesting too, because I feel like Britney, as soon as I came out with that song, TikTok is a terrible place, by the way. TikTok is a dark, terrible place that's not mediated at all. And I was just so naive. and dived into TikTok, and I put you know, some videos of me singing the song, and people were replying back being like, why would you want to be associated with Britney Spears? Or like, I hope you don't have a breakdown like 2007. And I just thought, it's how interesting that women are held to such high standards that if one thing happens to them that's human, it takes away all of their amazing artistry that they've created.
Yeah.
And for me, what I saw in 2007 was a vulnerable girl who's been taken advantage of and nobody was there to help her. That's what I saw. But for Britney, for me, this bitch is doing her own fucking flips on stage.
Yeah.
She doesn't get a stunt double to come in and do those on her music videos. She does that, and she works really hard. And what I mean by Black Britney Spears is that I want to be as involved in my music, and I want to be as care, like, I want to care about my live performance as much as she does. And like, you can see it when she performs that, like, you know, it's the kind of level, not obviously at all the same as Michael Jackson, but like, she's so on point with her performance. And I feel like we're lacking a lot of that now with the live performances. Like, people are just getting up in the same pair of jeans that they wear every bloody day, men. And for me, like, I want to wear something new every time. I want to do something new every time. And I want people to like my live performances more than my Spotify streams, you know? And that's kind of why I said Black Britney, because I'm not a white girl. So I'm adding my own little black flavor to it. And that's kind of, yeah, that's why it's a Black Britney. And the term deadly bitch. So for those of you who don't know what deadly means, it's an Aboriginal term that only black people can use. And so a deadly bitch comes from, like, obviously the Nicki Minaj, Black Barbie, and that whole amazing shift that she brought, such, like, beautiful sexuality towards black women. And I feel like Aboriginal women are really underappreciated. You know, like, I feel like people look at us so differently. They look at us, they look at us as where, you know, we have a deficit. Or, you know, we're not as privileged, which we're not as privileged. But I feel like some people mistake that, because we are still really beautiful and staunch and sexy. And I wanted to talk about that in the song.
100%. I think that's extremely, extremely fair. But also, like, I think that for a long time in Australia, and I can only say this as, like, a white person, Ken, is that there hasn't been a good representation in terms of, not good representation, but there hasn't been enough representation, sorry, of First Nations music and like and like that kind of broad spectrum. As you kind of said, like, you grew up having all of these different experiences and kind of emotions and thoughts and influenced by people like Britney Spears as well. And so I think that it's really good in 2023 that we've got artists like yourself coming forward with these other unique perspectives that I don't think the Australian music scene was necessarily highlighting well, and I think they are now.
Yeah, so my mum, like, we used to go to so many festivals growing up. My mum used to be in events, and so, like, I've been going to festivals since I was really little, and then when I was able to go by myself to, like, Falls Festival in Tassie, what I was seeing every single day on the lineup was the same band, but different versions of them. Mm-hmm. Bunch of Kevins.
Four white guys.
Yeah. All, like, long hair, you know, fucking jeans and, like, shades, double denim, that sort of shit. Mm-hmm. And when I was young, I was like, yeah, this is our music. We listen to indie rock. This is what Australia has to offer. And then I saw people like TK Maida on the scene. And I was like, whoa, what is going on, you know? Uh-huh. And, like, she ripped through the Australian music industry. And I was kind of like, I want to see more of that. Mm. And then I started getting older and I realized that it wasn't that we didn't have these artists. It was that they weren't getting booked because of racism. You know, racism is systemic. And whether people realize it or not, music festivals are the key to what people will listen to. You know, you go to music festivals, you're drunk or whatever, you accidentally stumble across a new band, you listen to them, and then you listen to them for the rest of your life, or you listen to them for the next couple months. And so music festivals, they have so much responsibility for having an equitable lineup, and that's what I would like to see. I would like to see them actually, you know, start booking people of color, start booking queer people, and like really sharing light, because like, if I'm being honest, like they're the most authentic creators. You know, like we create the culture, and like I'm just sick of listening to boys sing about going to the beach and drinking beers and hanging out with girls, and you know, there's only so many times you can rewrite that story.
Yes, agreed, agreed. I think that, like, there, don't get me wrong, there is a place for that, but again, as you said, there's only so many times that you can hear it.
Yeah,
and
of course.
It's nice to have different perspectives, different stories, different things to listen to, other than, as you said, the same.
Especially because this country is so multicultural. I feel like people forget, like, the White Australia policy is real. You know, we still have the White Australia policy here, and Europeans are always going to be given the better option for where they want to live. But, like, there are so many cultures in this country. You know, there's a huge Asian population, there's a huge African population, and everything in between. And I feel like, you know, why aren't we seeing that in our mainstream music? Why aren't we seeing that on the lineups? And I feel like now, though, like, there's so much more of that, and I'm so happy to be a part of that as well.
I think there's a lot of people that are happy to see you on the music show as well. There is also a brand new single out at the moment.
No, tonight.
Tonight.
It premieres.
When this runs,
it will be out. I like money. Can't fast cars. I like bad girls who do what they want.
The new single is out tonight. It'll be out now, when, and it'll be linked into this YouTube video. Pinnacle Bitch is out right now. Firstly, fantastic track.
Thank you.
Absolutely love this. I wanted to ask a lot about a line in the song, because I'm fascinated when, not necessarily like diss tracks, but when you're choosing to like throw some shade at someone.
Yes.
There's a line in it that I'm top pinnacle bitch. I'm going to get this wrong, so I apologize.
You're just a bum-suck snitch.
Yes. And I wanted to ask the bum-suck snitch, how do you land on an insult that, or like a diss that is, how do you pick what's going to work in the song?
I just think about the person that I'm talking about, and I just realize that they suck up to people and they're a fucking snitch. And it sounds good.
Yep.
So, yeah, but you're right. That is funny. It is a diss track, because I wrote it when I was being bullied by someone in particular, and I just, like, when I was in it, I thought that it was my fault. I was like, you know, I like internalized a lot of it, but it wasn't until I came out of it and I stopped seeing that person, wasn't around me anymore, that I realized that actually that person was extremely jealous of me, because they had to verbally bully me to make themselves feel better.
Yeah.
And that's such intense insecurity, when you have to actually like go out of your way to make someone feel bad about themselves when they've done nothing to you.
Yeah.
That's extreme insecurity, and I feel bad for you, and please don't get it twisted, like I'm fucking better than you, like don't make me feel like I'm not. And you know, I feel like I take things very personal, and instead of like lashing back, I wrote a song.
I know that it's almost somewhat cliche in the music industry to talk about like songwriting is cathartic, things like that. Did you feel a sense of relief once you did write it? Yeah.
Yes, I did. Especially because it's a fucking banger.
It is.
And I'm going to make lots of money. yeah, I definitely felt a big weight lift off my shoulders when I wrote this song, because I was feeling like, you know, I used to do like journaling.
Yeah.
And then I kind of moved away from that when I started writing more music, and I realized that music was actually, you know, Aboriginal people, First Nations people, Black people have always used music and song as a way of telling their story and as healing. Like we as First Nations people have always used music as healing. And so for me, modernizing that and using, you know, hip hop to help heal my trauma from that, it made me feel a lot better about myself. And it also was kind of like pep-talking myself as well, like reminding myself that I am staunch, I am fucking deadly, and I am a pinnacle bitch, and you fucking suck ass. So that's how it made me feel. And like most of it when I was writing, it was kind of like, you know, yes, you know, you are like that. And then it wasn't until I performed it a few times that I was kind of more settling myself into that emotion.
I absolutely love it. The track is incredible.
Thank you.
It is staunch. Mm. we would usually ask our guests what they're currently listening to. Mm-hmm. Is there anything at the moment that's kind of on high rotation for yourself?
Yeah, what's on high rotation? For me, I've been listening to heaps of Ray at the moment. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. also I've been listening to Lakeyla. Lakeyla. I've been saying Lakeyla 47 for my entire life. And then I went to Triple J the other day and one of the presenters was like, it's Lakeyla. And I was like, what the fuck?
You've taught me that now, so I didn't know why.
Right? But it's so funny because I get really pissed off when people say my name wrong, mm-hmm. and I'm out here not saying another black woman's name right. So, but yeah, I've been listening to Chitty Bang by her because she's like, she's the GOAT.
Mm.
She's crazy.
Some incredible talent.
Yeah, it's so, yeah, I've just been listening to a lot of black female artists at the moment on high rotation.
Awesome. If you were to give a recommendation to any Australian First Nations artists, who would you throw a shout out to?
Definitely Barker,
yep.
Jada Weasel. Those two are crazy. Mm. Also Kobe D, Tasman Keith, you know, they're incredible artists. Kobe D, I feel like he just knows what's up.
Mm.
He knows what's up. And when he performs, him and Bark are the same. Like, they just let you in so much and they share so much of their story, and what they're singing about is not easy. You know, people are fucking lucky to be able to hear what they have to say.
Yeah.
Every time I see Bark, I feel like I'm seeing her for the first time. I've seen her heaps of times. And just the way that she gives herself to the crowd is incredible. And anybody that goes and watch Barker will agree with me that she's so staunch. And she's a mum as well. Like,
it's crazy.
And she's young too. Like, she knows what's up and she's seen so much. And, yeah, she looks like her whole story. I performed a gig called Black Up, which is a First Nations creators workshop that ran for like a week or something like that. One of my good friends, Caution, Mob Caution, he co-curated it, and he asked me to come down and open for Barker, which was the first time they met her. And she sang a song about her dealing with addiction, how she was clean, and how she was sorry to her children. And I tell you right now, every single person in that tent was crying their eyes out because she wasn't only healing her own trauma, she was healing their trauma as well. Because, you know, our community has dealt with a lot of addiction and it's not our fault. And for her to kind of own that and be like, you know, I wish I fought for you, you know, as her daughter, like, it just, like, you just saw everybody's heart just, like, heal a little bit more. And that's why I love Barker, because she's not thinking about herself. She's thinking about her whole community.
Any time that I've listened to Barker, and I think seen her once in Adelaide, going to try and catch her this week at South By. She's
here
at South By, and so is Kobe. But that it has been this incredible kind of that. It's like it's her world and we're just kind of like floating.
We're all just living in it.
100%.
She's the queen.
Agreed. Miss Kanina, thank you so much
thank
for coming onto
so
the
much.
Pod. I appreciate it. And congratulations on Pinnacle Bitch, which is out now. Check it out, please.
Check it out. Yeah. Shake your ass to it. Let me see it. And I put gas in my tank. I take my bag to the bank. These bitches try, but they can't. I'm at the head, I pull rank. And don't you worry about me, cause I be charging that fee. So ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.